This podcast is brought to you by
Don't Stop.
In today's high-tech, fast-paced world, you need a wonderful website to promote your business. You have a vision of how you want it to look, but you need someone with the skills to design it. Isn't it comforting to know that David Webb Designs not only has the experience to create a professional site, but he's ready and willing to listen to your ideas and suggestions? He'll work with you every step of the way until you're happy with the final design. That's davidwebdesigns.com. Don't just dream about the perfect website. Get it with davidwebdesigns.com.
Stop.
You're listening to David Allen and Liz Stone.
Shall we begin?
I gotta say, just hearing you guys speaking and hearing all the innuendos, I had sparkling water in my hand, and now there is tequila in my hand. So
of course,
I've joined the party officially. You transformed me in 4 minutes.
Let's begin.
Let's unstrap your bra, draw the bath, and get ready to get unleashed. David Allen.
I have to say this, and then we'll get off the baloney pony, but I just think that it's so unique that he deserves a song, even if it's like a 2-minute skit just about baloney pony.
Liz Stone.
That's my secret. That's not your
secret. Did you just make that up? I want that. Robin S. Is that you?
Now you're getting in the mood for Unleashed.
I don't even know what to say. I'm speechless.
Welcome to David Allen and Liz Stone Unleashed. Guess what, Liz? I'm not joined by the biggest hoe in the room anymore, which is not you. We got Wendy Ho with us today.
And I I have officially won the bet. I just got to say, I called her. She's a biological female. You thought Wendy Ho was a full-on drag queen. So guess what, David Allen? You lose the bet.
Well, okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah. We'll start this segment out with, at first when I saw Wendy Ho, I really did think she was a drag queen. But apparently she gets that all the time, right, Wendy?
Well, I am a drag queen. I'm a female drag queen. But the reason I went into this line of work was because, you know, my pussy is so big I have to tuck it.
Wow, soon it's going to be dragging
that's
the floor to throw it over your shoulder, huh?
That's a meaty tuck.
Yeah, I'm just dragging it behind me some days. You know how it is.
No, I do. Oh, do I ever. Amen, sister.
Wow, so what a great introduction, Wendy. Tell our listeners all about you and you know, your hanging vagina now.
My hanging vagina. Well, I am a female drag queen / singer / rapper / comedian. I live in Los Angeles. And, I primarily play in gay bars. And you will probably know some of my stuff probably because a lot of drag queens actually cover my songs. They will lip sync to them in the bars. And got some YouTube videos and things, you know, out there. And I'm just a performer, an entertainer, an entertainstress.
Now, Liz, I understand you have a bone to pick with Wendy because I think she stole your purse, didn't she?
She did. She did. And she emptied it out like that time of the month. And the last time I saw it, I think she bedazzled it. So, Wendy, what the hell are you doing with my purse?
Girl, I did you a favor by taking that purse because I saw in your life that you needed a new one. So I was doing you a favor by, like, you know, listen, I think, you know, by the looks of that purse, you are suffering from a little bit of low self-esteem. So
wow.
I just wanted to help you out, girl.
Dr. Ho is in the house. Yes. Well, listen, Wendy, I want to hear about your journey. You have a bit of a Wizard of Oz-esque kind of a backstory to tell. You're from Kansas City, Kansas, kind of like Dorothy, but the drag Dorothy.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you followed the Yellow Brick Road to New York City. Bring us back in time. Tell us what happened. I want to hear the whole journey of Miss Wendy Ho.
Well, I actually was born in Ohio, and we was very poor, and we lived in a trailer court. And I always say that, you know, really, there are no color lines in this country. There's just poverty lines, you know, and a lot of what has influenced my act has been just the sameness that I find in kind of the white trash and in the ghetto. But I don't want to get ahead of myself. So I started performing at a very young age for my best friend, who was a little black girl named Tamiko, and I would perform for her. We went to Catholic school. We were both the poor kids in the school.
Wow.
I would perform behind the church during recess. I would, like, sing all these songs, but we were kind of like the outcasts because we were poor, and it was back at a time when we were no longer wearing uniforms. We had to start wearing nice clothes to school. And so both of us, again, not because of who we were, you know, the color of our skin, but because we were poor, we're kind of like sequestered together, which was great because she was great company and hilarious and really influenced a lot of what my humor is today. So I had to move to Pennsylvania first, and then we moved to Kansas City, and I continued to just, you know, more and more perform in theater and musical theater and just plays and stuff, and really found myself like just embraced by the theater, you know, world, and really got into it there in Kansas City. And then went to school at Missouri State University and continued on in my theater training, and also did a lot of drugs school. And yeah, the hoe was just kind of birthed at parties where I would write raps about teachers and students, and people were like, oh my God, you got to see this white girl rap, it's crazy. And so people would really, really like clamor for it, even though I was a legitimately trained actress and a singer. You know, they were just like, oh, you got to do that Wendy Ho thing. And my middle name is Joe, so that was just the nickname that I got after I started writing these raps, was Wendy Ho. And it just continued to really follow me wherever I went. Like, I graduated from school, and then I went to Chicago, and I was still, like, doing it, like, backstage for people and at parties. And then I went to New York, and people had, from Chicago had told somebody in New York. I ended up doing it for, like, the opening night of a Broadway show. Like, it was crazy. And it just was something that I just kept coming back to. And so as a struggling actress, I was really trying to find my place in New York, and I just really wasn't. I'm kind of a type that, you know, kind of falls through the cracks of, like, you're kind of a character actress, but you're not really skinny enough or fat enough or ugly enough for us to put you in these kind of matronly or, you know, character roles. So I was really kind of hitting my head up against the wall, and I saw an ad for a producer that was writing songs, and I was like, you know, I really think I just want to sing right now. So I went in to record and just started off recording, like, just legit kind of R&B stuff. I was singing with a band. And then I was telling him one day about being at this party, at this opening night party for this Broadway show, and having these people, like, clamor for me to do Wendy Ho. And he was like, well, what is that all about? I had never even, like, told him about it. And I was just like, oh, well, I put out this joke CD one year called Bitch Off a Leash. And I gave it to, like, all of my friends. And at the same time, like, I had recorded, like, other albums, but this was the one that, like, everybody wanted. So I brought it into him, and he listened to it, and he was like, oh my God, why are you not developing this? This is so funny. I don't know anybody that's doing this kind of humor musically. Certainly no white women that I know that are doing it. He was like, you really should just go for it, you know? And I was like, well, where
so
the
you
hell
have
am
your,
I going to perform?
Yeah, you have, your, you have your soul sister from your childhood to thank for this, don't you?
I really do. I really do. And the thing is, it drives me nuts is that I can't find her. Like, we were parted, like, when I was, like, yeah, like, in, like, I was, like, 10 years old when we moved. And I've looked on Facebook, I've internet, you know, sometimes, you know, I'll just think about it again, and I'll be like, oh, I wonder if she's here or where she's at. And
I can't find her. So, yeah, really I have her to thank for, like, just this kind of, like, oh, I do this secret thing, you know. And she would always laugh. She was like, you have no idea how funny this is, you know. So, yeah, so that was pretty much it. And then once I sat down with the producer and we started writing songs and I sent out an email to, like, all of my performer friends in New York. I was like, where can I perform this shit? What do you guys... And so they started, like, directing me, and they were like, oh, you should go to here and hear the show. And I started out doing comedy clubs. And then I was pretty quickly hired at Caroline's on Broadway. They gave me my own, like, show Wednesday nights, you know, for a while where I was doing that. But, you know, I was being paid nothing, and I was working my ass off to, like, bring them a full house, you know. And I was like, okay, well, then once I figured out what I was making for the club versus what I was taking home, I was like, okay, I need to either get a raise or, you know, find another place to perform. And I went into the office, and it was very early. I mean, very naive, had no idea what the hell I was doing, really. And, you know, the booker was just like, that's not going to happen here. You're crazy. You know, we're doing you a favor by putting you on here. And, you know, I was like, I'm not asking for, you know, half of what I'm even bringing in, you know. And so I left the office and I just felt really bad. But that night, my friend was like, hey, there's a drag queen who is doing one of your songs over at the club. We should go. We should go and see. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. And he was like, no, let's go check this out. And I was like, you know what's crazy is that I had always said if my name was on Broadway and if drag queens were doing my stuff, I will know I had made it. And that had already, like, happened within, like, the first, like, 6 months of me officially doing Wendy Ho. And I was broke. I had nothing, you know, I had nothing. And so I was like, all right, well, let's go check out this drag queen. And I got there, and they had heard I was there, and they were like, oh, will you interrupt her and sing the song? And I was like, yeah, totally. So interrupted her, sang the song that night. You know, the crowd went crazy, and I was like, oh, my gosh, this is awesome. Like, you know, these gay bars, I'd been in them before, but I had no idea, like, or even had thought that this would be a place where I would go and perform. And that night they offered me a show, and I gave them the same pitch of money that I'd given to Caroline's, and they were like, yeah, of course we can pay you that. That's no problem. And I left Caroline's on Broadway, and I've been working in gay bars ever since and have been completely taken care of beyond my wildest, you know? I mean, so that's the nuts and bolts.
You are one smart hoe.
Yeah, you do have quite the following, too. So with all the experiences you've had thus far with the gay bars and the traveling and stuff, what is the craziest shit you've ever seen? Like, what's the number one moment that you've seen traveling?
Well, I will say, I mean, as far as, like, the craziest shit I've ever seen, I worked a party. I didn't even travel for this. This is when I lived in New York. I live in L.A. now, but I was hired to do a party, and they were like, yeah, you know, it's a sexy party, so we want you to come in and sing your Fuck Me song. And I was like, okay, great. So I get there, and I'm like, oh, you mean a literal sexy party. Like, people were having sex, like, in front of me by the time I got done singing the song. And I was like, okay, all right. I've seen some interpretive dances. But I've never seen two people just go ahead and fuck during that song. All right, okay. So that was the craziest thing.
How did that make you feel?
Yeah.
Did it make you feel good that people have affected your song?
Well, it did, but I was very uncomfortable because really underneath all this, you know, sexitude, like, I'm extremely awkward white bitch, like, where I was like, oh, my God, what is going on?
It's the Catholic school, hunty. I went through it, too. I get it.
Trust me.
It never goes away.
No, it doesn't.
It'd be easier to think of somebody singing your shit in the shower or doing the nasty when you're not in the room watching them. I get that. But, yeah,
right.
I'm sure that
but
whole...
Right in front of your face, like, penis into vagina. I was like, what? I just kept singing the song. I was I'm going to look over here. You can fuck me. Yeah, right there. You can fuck me. Okay.
You know what? You just thought of a whole nother season of American Horror Story with that one word. So I think you should get a hold of the producer for that.
Oh, well, he already stole my idea. He already stole my video for Nip Tuck.
Uh-oh.
So he knows who
really?
I am. Yeah, this happened back in, like, 2007. Nip Tuck aired an episode where they had a character on, I forget what her name is, Hot Coco is what her name was, but it was Jennifer Coolidge.
Jennifer Coolidge,
played her,
yeah.
Played
yeah,
her, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was the video that was her character as Hot Coco is a ripoff of Bitch, I Stole Your Purse, scene
wow.
by scene. And, yeah. And, you know, people were, like, blowing my phone up. I'm like, Wendy, oh, my God, they, like, totally, like, ripped, like your video, the complete, utter thing off. And so it got some press. And, you know, I mean, there's really nothing that I could do except for, you know, just be like, well, in one way that feels good because, you know, Ryan Murphy needs to steal from me, I guess. But in another way, it feels like, you know, like I'm being raped, you know, because a lot of people don't know who I am. And they'll look at that and then come to my show and be like, oh, she's trying to be that girl from Nip Tuck. And I'm like, no, I actually created this. This is mine, you know. So
and then you try to defend it and people are like, oh, she's just being bitter, you know. So it's a whole big mess. So you took the
you
high
know,
road
the
and just kind of let it go.
Forget those yeah. kind of people. These are the same people that are going to tell you that Kanye is going to make Paul McCartney famous. So I wouldn't worry about that shit.
Oh, I'm not. Like I said, I have been so taken care of. Like I'm not worried about it. You know, it's not anything that I hold on to or was like, oh, I'm going to sue them. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, I also am inspired by artists. I write parodies. You know, the difference is that people usually know who those artists are when I take. My take on them, you know. So, yeah, it's just something that happens all the time in Hollywood. What I'm learning
Wendy,
as well, you know.
I'm very curious to know about "Bitch, I Stole Your Purse." Where in the hell did that come from? That was probably, I think, one of the best songs of your career.
Well, that came from being at a party with some friends, and we were smoking some weed. In this room where, like, it was, like, the room where they put all the coats and the purses. And I was like, wouldn't it be funny if I just emptied out every single one of these purses and took the purses home with me tonight? And I was like, yeah, the hoe was here, bitch. I stole your purse. And we were all, like, just laughing so hard about it. And, like, we were, like,
funny.
Singing, like, the beginning of it, you know. It didn't sound the way that it ended up sounding, but we were, like, just being retarded. And I went home and I wrote a song about it.
I will never forget when I first saw that. Well, number one, I thought you were a drag queen. And two, I immediately sent it to Liz. Liz probably listened to that song 100 times. She was rapping your shit the next day. It was so funny. It was
Why
are you pushing that little dog off the couch, though? Man, you pissed me off with that.
No, listen, that was the director's dog, and he told me to do it. He was like, Wendy, it'll be so funny. Just do it. I've gotten so much shit for that, and I love...
I'm just fucking your balls.
I love dogs, and I love Tucker, and it felt so bad because I had to do it, like, 4 times. So by the end, like, I was like, come here, Tucker. He didn't want to come up on the couch with me anymore.
I wonder why.
Pushing his fucking head. Oh, Tucker.
Aww.
I love you, Tucker.
Yeah,
I could just see you
right
down
now.
Getting
she
your Gucci. Couldn't you see Wendy Hill getting her Gucci on?
Yeah, her Gucci, Prada, Louis Vuitton. Mm-hmm.
There it goes. Now, do you go into, like, the Gucci store, the Louis Vuitton store, and empty out the purses and just leave?
Did I?
No. Do you do that now?
Or do I? Oh, yeah, every day, girl. I go in and I empty out, like, the paper and the stuffing that they have in there, and I'm like, I stole your purse, bitch. Bye. Yeah. All the time.
Now,
all
there
the
was
time.
Haven't
been arrested yet. It's amazing. It's crazy.
And yet she has a collection in the back of a truck. So I saw her the first. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So I heard something tragic happened to your drag. What happened? Somebody stole your stuff out of your trunk.
Yeah, somebody stole my purse, bitch. Somebody stole my drag bag.
Wow. Walk us through that. What happened?
I was in San Francisco, and I was getting ready to do a weekend of shows up there in the area, and I was doing a photo shoot for a magazine, for Left magazine that's up there, and I had gotten done with the photo shoot, and we didn't have time to run my stuff home, and I knew I was going to kind of a shady area, but I was like, fine, you know, and so I had just a ton of everything with me because it was a photo shoot, you know, so I brought extra things that I didn't even need, but I went to the show down in the South of Market area, and we put everything in the trunk, and then we got back after the show, and my friend did not lock his door. Oh. And so they just popped the trunk, and they just took everything.
Wow. So was it a big bag, or just kind of just, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a huge bag with, like, I mean, and a garment bag full of, like, I don't know, eight outfits, you know, and just full
Holy
of...
shit.
All my makeup, all my, yeah, I mean, it really did, it set me back about $2,500, but somebody did
wow.
post a GoFundMe on Facebook, and it's all been recouped, and I was able to pay it forward. I asked for $2,500, but people, like, paid, like, I don't know, it was, like, $3,500 or $3,600 at the end, and I was able to pay that money forward to a couple of charities and to a transsexual sister of mine that she had her leg amputated. And I was like, I can't believe, like, people are willing to pay for my GoFundMe because of my name, you know, because it's out there, you know, they were able to give me money, but she had only raised like $200 for her leg, you know? And I was like,
aww.
you need this, you know? So I was able to pay it forward to her and to a homeless agency that's in San Francisco as well. So it all worked out, you know, and it's kind of one of those bad things that happens sometimes in life to just remind you of how blessed you are, you know.
You are a hoe with a heart. You have a big
yeah,
heart, Romeo.
It was a pain in the ass more than anything, you know, and it was just stressful because I had shows to do, so I had to run around and get new things, and you know, that was just an added stress on top of everything. But at the end of the day, like, it was it ended
what
up
I
being
wanna
fine.
Know how are you gonna react when you see some hoes work in the corner wearing some of your outfits that they stole? How are you gonna react?
I don't, at this point now I'm in such a place of acceptance with it, I probably would like pull them over and be like, let's take selfies, bitch. Let's show these people, you know, I mean, I don't know why anybody would steal all that shit, but it's out of my hands.
And so I take it you never caught the person who did it or have any suspicions of who
did
it.
Oh, no. We started to kind of drive around that area and we're asking people, like, if they had seen anything. And, I mean, you know, San Francisco is really homeless in some areas.
Right.
It's like the place in the state of California where they will take people and just drop them off and be like,
wow.
go to San Francisco. So it's a real problem, but... we were kind of asking around, and people were pretty helpful and responsive, but then I kind of realized, I'm like, I'm asking these people who live out of carts if they have seen my wigs and glitters. Like, you know, it's some kind of tragedy, and it really put things in perspective where I was like, I got to stop, you know? Like, I have to accept that this has happened and just move forward and get the bare minimum shit that I'm going to need for this weekend and move on with the show, you know? I mean,
it's tragic, but it's a lesson all the same, I suppose, you know? And it seems like you moved on very well from it.
Kind of. I mean, tragic, I don't know, tragic to white people, I guess, you know? Like,
but the good news
white
is,
people problems, you know? Like,
white people problems, that's right.
Yeah.
But you're beloved. And next thing you know, you're going to see a guy pushing a cart, wearing a wig with glitter on his titties. So, and you can
okay.
think, and he can say, thank you, Wendy.
Live the
All
right,
Liz, stop talking about me like
live
that.
Live the fantasy.
This is the second episode. She talks about my glittery nipples. I'm tired of it. I'm putting the foot down, Liz. No more glittery nipples.
Oh, glittery nipples. They're the best kind.
That is so. I got to know, how did you go from like a cabaret scene into this hoe persona? Like, did it just happen like that, or is this something you wanted to do? Did you want to be a hoe when you grow up?
Well, I did when I was little. I did tell people after I had seen Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, they would ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I would say I wanted to have big boobs and a chicken ranch. So I kind of did. I wanted to be Miss Mona, you know. Yeah, I don't know. It just, to me, it was just kind of a natural progression in my career of like going from like, you know, a performer seeking the niche that's going to fit them, you know. I tried my hat as an actor and as a legit singer and just wasn't getting any traction. I just hated the audition process is just, it's horrible to me. I don't know how people do that. Like, I have a lot of friends here in LA that do, and I just don't know how they do that. But creating my own work and, you know, having it be received and having people care about it is a joy, you know. So it is what it is, you know. I mean, it really did just kind of happen that way.
I would love to see you do a reality show like Ho Makeovers. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody can be a hoe. You could show them how to be a hoe. See? Make that money.
Yeah,
move
girl.
On
get
up.
Your money, get your money first. Get your money first. Ho train.
Right.
Ho camp.
That's right.
Ho camp for little girls.
I always tell Liz, either go shirtless, get the money first, because I've had that a couple of times where, you know, I did it and they ran, so.
Yeah, those glittery nipples, you know, they want them.
How would you feel about being on the silver screen in a movie or something like that? Would that be something that you is in your future or you'd like to do?
Oh, sure. Reality TV, I think, is just something that is. I really hope that it goes away at some point because it's all they make out here. I have no desire to.
Well, there's nothing real about it. It's so scripted.
Yeah. There's no such thing as reality TV, and it's everywhere out here because it's cheap and they don't have to pay writers or actors. And I would love to work on something with, you know, that's host-centric or not, that's, you know, with some writers and with a team of people. But, you know, you gotta pay those people, and they deserve to be paid, you know. What's that?
You want to be tasteful is what you're saying.
No, it's not even that I want to be tasteful. It's that I want to be an artist and I want to work with a team. You know, I don't want to have to sell my soul to some producers that are going to manipulate me and exploit me the way they do on, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race. Like, no, thank you.
So what are your thoughts on RuPaul's Drag Race since you brought that up? What are your thoughts on Drag Race? Do you like it or do you think that it's just too scripted?
I like what it's done for the art of drag because I started out in these gay bars when there was a time when people just did drag really to support their drug habits, and now it really is a legitimate art form, you know, like these kids take it seriously, you know, but, you know, like anything that's a phenomenon or, you know, anything that's mainstream, it's just going to have a double-edged sword. And, you know, for as much as, you know, I feel like the show is everybody say love, I don't think it's everybody show love, you know. And so I think that there has been some unfortunate things that have happened because of it. But I watch it, you know, I do. I don't agree with everything that goes on, but I enjoy it for what it is as a piece of entertainment.
And see, I agree with you. Like, Liz and I are very avid fans of Drag Race, but I think the last two seasons we kind of fell off, including the season
we're
in now. Like, we kind of watch it when we can with not a rush to go, oh, Monday night's here, we got to watch Drag Race. I don't know if the show's just stale. I just feel like you can only do the same thing over and over again. And then they renewed for an eighth season, which is great. And I absolutely love RuPaul. RuPaul has been an inspiration to me since I was a kid, you know. But
of course, yep, of course.
It just,
yeah.
It
not
just,
to
like,
mention,
it's
David and I were in Times Square recently. We saw a huge Digital display ad for RuPaul Drag Race says, "What it say? Realness just got realer." Isn't that what it said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
something like
this
that.
Year, but and it's just like, you know, we talked to one of the queens, Tempest Dujour, from the new season, and she had said, mm-hmm. you know, you're not going to see the prettiest queens, you're not going to see the most talented queens, you're just going to see the queens that they selected for this season. And honestly, I think they recycle the queens' personalities every single season. You know, season one set this the precedent for what it's supposed to be. And ever since then, we've had an Angina, we've had a Raven, we've had a Pandora Box, you know, and it's just,
sure.
I don't know, I'm just, I, sure. for me, it's just, you know, eh.
I agree.
I
mean, it's like any reality show, like, you know, that starts off, you know, where we kind of all remember who won the first American Idol, you know, but now I don't know
right.
who the hell's on that show anymore. I don't watch it. I could care
yeah,
less.
That's true.
But, well, don't forget about Tammy Brown, and you've worked with Tammy, haven't you, Wendy?
Yeah, I've worked with her a lot, actually. I just had her on my podcast last week. And, I've worked with her a lot, you know, in the last couple of months. And I just adore her, you know. And she's just also, you know, like, will not apologize for being an artist, which is great, you know. But, you know, sometimes on that show, when you're that type of artist and you're not somebody that's willing to conform to that style of modern drag, you kind of
she had the old Hollywood style,
yeah,
which I think
mm-hmm.
a lot of people are drawn to. It's fascinating,
mm-hmm.
it's interesting,
mm-hmm.
it's different.
Yeah, it's just like she's got a whole kooky character that I just love. It's one part like old Hollywood and another part like Tina Turner and another part like Pee Wee Herman, you know, like it's great, you know, but it's like I said, like, you know, unless you're, I guess my main problem just with the show and the way that it seems to be going now is, you know, it's modeled after Top Model. We get that. But it's not Top Model. Like, you know, these girls are not models. And I just feel like more and more it's all about, you know, looking like a model like RuPaul, you know. And I feel like last season with Bianca, like, was a big exception to the rule. But I also think that those producers pay attention to who is well-liked on the show. And that forms the storyline, you know.
Yeah,
and as it should, you know, as it should. But I feel like they and themselves as a team, like, and as a, you know, I don't know, as a brand, the RuPaul brand of doing drag is very pretty, very glamorous, you know, just kind of everybody. Like, I'm sick of going to bars now and seeing Raven's face on everybody. You know, just like,
yeah.
You do know that when you sign up to be an artist, like, it's because you have something to say that is your own, and you have something to contribute that is your own. And I see a lot of these girls, they're just wanting to be famous and be on Drag Race and learn how to paint on YouTube and are ready to go in 6 months and have nothing
well,
to
you know,
say. Have
Wendy,
nothing
we
to say.
All come from different generations, too. I mean, we now have social media and YouTube and, you know, the reality shows, whereas I'm sure when you were growing up, I was growing up, certainly when Liz was growing up, we didn't have the Internet to launch us. I am an old drag queen myself. I did this shit like 15 years ago. I did it way
mm-hmm.
before we had any social media. So when I was pop, I was Drag Queen of the Year. I was Miss Scranton. I won that stuff because of my working my ass off. Now it's like you post
mm-hmm.
a photo and it just gets circulated everywhere. And, oh, guess what? You're the winner now. It's great.
Yeah.
You know,
so, yeah, Yeah, it is. It's a double-edged sword. And, like, in this generation, yeah, like, I agree. Like, it's just, it seems to me like it's because you can make it exist in space on the Internet that people feel, like, entitled to be famous, you know? And it's just crazy. So
and
Liz, that's what I'll say
about
that.
What do you say to that? What do you attribute to that, Liz?
I just think people want to win the RuPaul statue. That's all it is. That's all we're caring about this time.
Yep.
But, hey,
no.
Hey, the good news is we keep advancing, we keep evolving, and I think it's fabulous that you've had so much love from the gay community, and I wish you so much success in the future with all your projects, and we're all going to be watching you. I know I am.
Oh, thank you so much. I feel the same way, you know, that I am very, very lucky to have been embraced by this community and, you know, really have so many drag mothers myself, and feel very, very blessed to be invited in, because I don't know too many women that do what I do and have the opportunity. So, I'm forever grateful.
Well, Dave will even tell you, like, for a while, Lady Gaga was held to high esteem with the gay community, but that's kind of fallen off. Well, tell us about that, David.
I mean, I just feel, for me, this is me going on a rant, being a gay man myself, it was a horrible thing for her to go into this whole Born This Way campaign. I think that's what killed her, because it was constant gay. Let's put more spotlight on the gay community. We had enough. We were dealing with enough issues to begin with. And although her message was good and it was clear, I just think that she kept continuing upon that and trying to build her fame off of that. And it just really wrecked her more than helped her. And now she's poor Tony Bennett, trying to ride off of his coattails, trying to get back on top again. And she's like, you know, like, wait a minute here. How did this happen? You know, that's just my take on Lady Gaga. And it's just my opinion. But I used to be a huge fan of her, but then that Born This Way album came out, and it was over for me. I just was so go. And she did. She continued with it.
Yeah. Well, I can't speak from the place of a gay man myself, even though I do feel like I have one inside of me. But I, you know.
What are you doing different?
I know, right?
How
first do you,
time
you heard
a biological woman say that, huh?
Not like that, you guys. Not like that, you dirty birdies. But I don't know. Like, I don't know that we can have, in this day and age, somebody really stay on top for as long as a Madonna or, you know, a Cher or anybody like that, just because there's always the next thing coming along now. You know, I just don't know that kind of fame really exists for anybody anymore, and that, you know, she hit and she hit big, and she'll probably, you know, she'll continue to have a career. I mean, I just don't know about this whole, like, staying on top thing, like, if that's possible for you to do that in this day and age. I mean,
well, I think our generation has a big, huge problem with ADHD or ADD. And I'm a victim of this too. If it's over 140 characters, I'm not interested in reading any more of it. You know, I've gotten the Twitter, the Facebook, and stuff like that. So I don't think it really has anything to do with talent per se. I think it's the way the genres roll. You know, one minute it's rock, next minute it's rap, one minute it's dance, out, pop. You know, it's just crazy how it just keeps moving, always moving.
So fast.
We'll always have poop noodle.
Well,
my God. The other David, the one who does our website, David Web Design, he will walk around the house and he'll be like, "You want to stick it in my poopa?" Like, that's all.
See, Wendy, you continue to inspire.
You are welcome. You are all welcome.
So tell us about that song. Where the hell did the inspiration come for that?
Well, I was working out at Fire Island at the esteemed Ice Palace Hotel, and I was putting my things away in my room, and I looked over, and I was like, oh, my God, what is that? On my bedspread, there was a poop stain. And I was like, okay, all right, okay. So I went to the concierge, and I was like, excuse me, I don't mean to be a diva, but there's poop on my comforter. And, I mean, and the guy was just like, oh, are you sure it's poop and not vaginal blood? And I was like, oh, really? Okay, all right, okay. I see what you're trying to do here.
Wow.
You think I just came up in here and was just like, oh, fuck y'all, I just got my period, I'm just smeared everywhere. Is that what you think? Okay. So,
nice.
I mean, you know, of course, you know, coming from an enraged place, I'm just like, I can't believe I'm here to, you know, perform, and there's poop on my comforter, and this guy's arguing about it with me. And then I went, you know, and then
wasn't the chocolate mint that melted, honey?
No, girl. I know a poop stain when I see one.
Okay.
I get to brag, but I know. And so I thought about how that poop stain got there, and I was like, oh, that's a poop noodle, boo. That's a poop noodle right there. So
there goes
that's
the song.
How that happened. That's how that happened. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's excellent. I have nothing. Liz, what do you got for that?
Inspiration comes from the strangest places. She literally pulled that out of her ass. Now, look at her go. This woman has talent. Talent, I tell you. For days.
Literally.
Wow. All right. Let me regroup here. Jesus, that got me good. All right. So, Wendy, before we let you go, we ask our listeners to go to getunleashedproductions.com and click the confessions link. And send us that burning, itching question that they need answered. And we love to ask our celebrities these questions to see, you know, how they would respond to it. So if you don't mind, we're going to read one to you, and we'd like you to answer it for our listener.
Wendy, by the way, this is so cool. I just want to put a little brag out there, because we have listeners from coast to coast, all across the United States. We're also heard in England, Ireland, the UK. We've gotten confessions from India. So it's a global thing. So you're really that's the beauty of Google Translator, right? So this is from the US, and I'm going to ask you a question first of all. Wendy, if you have ever rummaged through thrift stores to find vintage drag, you know some of the best things in life are close to being free. This confession comes from a listener who wants to know if there ain't no shame in their game. So here goes. My wife Tina was very hurt by a friend recently. Her friend Sally called her cheap during a conversation, and my wife is very upset about it. We use coupons when we grocery shop or dine out. We also watch our thermostats, recycle, etc. On the other hand, we have sent our children to universities without loans, our mortgage is paid off, we've traveled extensively, and our net worth is north of $1 million with absolutely no debt. How do I make Tina realize that Sally's comments should not upset her so? Signed, Thrifty in Texas.
Shit. You should have sent me all of your money. So you don't. I mean, your life speaks for itself. You don't have to do shit, you know? I mean, really, it goes back to that old, you know, what other people think of me is none of my business. Like, who the fuck cares? What this bitch thinks of you.
True.
You know, like, if you've got that money and you've sent your kids gold, then your life speaks for itself. There ain't no shame. Ain't no shame in that game. And if somebody is judging you for that, then you might want to get a new friend. I don't know.
He could probably buy a few, huh, with that $1 million.
Yeah, right?
The one thing that comes to my mind is what you said earlier. This sounds like a white girl problem to me.
Sounds like a white bitch problem.
I could just hear a black girl saying, "I don't give a shit what you think, bitch." Here, now let me light up a $100 bill. Let me light my $100 bill.
Yeah, girl.
So
who cares? If your life's that great, then why you care?
Let's do some shameless promoting, Wendy. Tell everybody where they can find you and what's been going on with you.
You can find everything that you need at the WendyExperience.com, WendyExperience.com, or if you can't spell experience, you can go to WendyHo.net, and that will take you to the same place, and that will connect you to all of my social medias, all of my videos, all of your ho needs.
So tell us about your new podcast, too. We're very interested in this.
Yeah, I just started the Wendy Experience podcast this past couple of weeks. I've had Tammy Brown on and Laganja Stranja, and now this week I'll be sitting down with Kelly Mantle. And you know, I'm with people all the time, but it's rare that I actually get to sit down and talk to them for an hour and hear where they're from and what they're doing. And I'm just very interested in other artists and why we're compelled to do what we do, because it's hard. You know, it's a hard path. So it really has been very therapeutic for me, and I think for most guests as well, to kind of sit down and talk about why we do what we do. So yeah, it's been awesome.
Sure. Wish all the
now,
best
I've
with
been
that.
Checking. I've been checking our email in the spam folder. I haven't quite got an invitation to come on the show yet. So maybe did you get my email address right?
Oh, well, you did go through my manager, so I'm going to have to get that from him, I guess. I'll have to talk to my people. Have my people talk to your people.
That's right. That's right. You're talking to our people, by the way. This is us. So.
Well, I would love to have you on and do a little cross and strain.
Uh-oh. Some cross-dressing. Uh-oh. With Wendy.
Uh-huh, cross-dressing.
There it is.
Cross-streaming, cross-dressing with Wendy Ho, yes.
I'm going to go watch some
video.
I'm going to go watch some Wendy Ho videos.
Yeah,
Vidi
girl.
Ho.
Get your Vidi Ho on. And yeah, and you can also at WendyExperience.com check out, I put out a new album last year, which is a compilation of all of my greatest shifts, and it went to number 7 on the Billboard comedy chart. So
wow.
Go and check it out on iTunes.
I will say nobody looks prettier sitting on a toilet than you, my dear.
It's true. It's true. It was a total homage to Miss Millie Jackson, girl, taking a poop. Squeezing
well,
out them shits,
so
girl. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was really
absolutely
fun.
It's been a blast. And we will definitely stop by any time. I mean, you know, I hope you had fun unstrapping your bra and getting unleashed with us today.
I sure did. I was braless the entire time. So
me too.
Oh, she didn't have a bra.
All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Wendy.
I do love your catchphrase. There's no business like hoe business. That's very clever.
Right. It's very true, girl. No business like it.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you. Bye.
Wow, Liz, so there is no business like hoe business, and I'm pretty sure you know that. And I thought I met the biggest hoe when I met you, but damn, she is a hoe.
Hey, I love the fact that this girl's getting paid. She's got a heart. She pays it forward. She's the real deal, Wendy Ho.
She knows how to get off of her knees and brush them off and just keep working, doesn't she?
That's right. That girl's going places.
That's right. That's right. Well, make sure you check her out, WendyHo.net, WendyHoExperience.com. Make sure you check us out, too, while you're on the .com, GetUnleashedProductions.com. Follow us on Twitter at GetUnleashed09. And, Liz, you're on Twitter, too, aren't you? Tell everybody your Twitter.
Oh, Liz Unleashed.
Liz Unleashed.
That's me.
And let me tell you, this bitch is unleashed. She
yeah,
can
don't
come
get me started on politics.
Oh,
don't get me started on politics.
140-character punchline you'll ever see in your life. I mean, it's so funny.
Yeah.
I often retweet her stuff all the time because it's so funny. And Facebook.com/GetUnleashed09. And, what else do we have to say today? This has been a great experience. I got down with the hoe tonight, first time. So.
That's right. But remember, we're not your only one-night stand. How about it?
We just want to be the one you remember. And, look, speaking of one-night stands, well, not so much a one-night stand, but Bernie Maxwell coming in to give us our Here's How moment of the week.
All right.
That's so exciting. Well, I guess have a good night, and we'll see you next time on Unleashed. Here's Bernie. Good night, Liz.
Have you been hoping for a style expert to help you have a fabulous life? The time has come to add sizzle to your style. With a hearty Here's How moment, it's time for Bernie Maxwell, America's domestic doyen.
I'm Bernie Maxwell, and I'm here with this week's Hints for Gracious Living. The mid-century is hot, and the savvy retailer knows it. Shopping for vintage items has gotten expensive. In some cases, quite a bit more expensive than buying new. There are, however, a few exceptions to that rule still out there percolating under the surface. If your thing is vintage clothing, you can find bargains by designers Malcolm Starr, Alex Coleman, and Vera. The Malcolm Starr label was known for elegant special occasion dressing, and the pieces you can find out there are quite beautiful. Many of them feature elaborate beading, embroidery, and detailed appliqué. His work spans the early 60s through the late 70s and is usually credited to either Eleanor Simmons, who designed the more ladylike feminine fashions, including beaded shifts,
Empire gowns and coat and dress combinations suitable for lunch with the girls. Or Rizkala, who tended to prefer bolder statements such as circus-inspired hostess skirts, lounging pajamas, and le-smoking outfits. If you find one of the circus skirts, you've hit a small gold mine. They routinely go for $300 to $500 on eBay. Alex Coleman was a sportswear company in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and their claims to fame were graphic prints and bright colors, and they made dresses, coats, and separates, mostly of cotton or linen. One of my favorite shift dresses is an Alex Coleman. Vera Newman is best known for designing delightful scarves printed with cheerful patterns she created herself. She was extremely prolific. Many people have at least one of her scarves signed simply Vera, with a little ladybug detail next to the name, printed right on the scarf, lying around the house in a collection from their mother or grandmother. She made clothing as well, also printed with her bright scarf prints. The dresses, blouses, and even menswear are a delightful find for the vintage shopper. If you prefer shopping for the home, you can also find beautiful items from Vera. Most people don't know that she designed linens, dishes, and even art for your walls. These and, well, other more obscure labels are a great place to start a vintage collection. They're known to collectors, but are still relatively unknown to the public at large and can be had for a song at thrift shops and tag sales. When shopping with the intention to resell the item in question, condition is important. Be sure the garments are in good shape, without compromising stains, spots, or tears. Be sure the napkins, tablecloths, and tea towels are not faded, and the dishes aren't worn and scratched. Next week, we'll talk about obscure music finds and how to integrate them into your life. Until then, I'm Breenie Maxwell. Bye now.
Find more from Breenie at BreenieMaxwell.com.
Ring-a-ling-a-ling, ring-a-ling-a-ling.